If the question is who's the go-to guy for LSU in 2023, I think the answer, in my opinion, is Malik Nabers. But my next question is who else? We'll get into that plus so much more on today's edition of Locked On LSU.
You are Locked On LSU, your daily podcast on the LSU Tigers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Well, thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. You can also check us out on YouTube as well. Just search Locked On LSU in the search bar. Subscribe, like, comment, rate, all that good stuff on your preferred podcast platform and on YouTube as well. My name is Caroline Fenton. You can find me on Twitter at CarolineFenton1. I'm your host, as I am every day, and I appreciate you guys for being here and making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. I also got to let y'all know that today's edition of Locked On LSU is brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more. Place your first $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. So it was officially announced that LSU will begin spring practice on March 9th. So we are less than a month away from LSU hitting the football field for spring practice. And this spring game is just over 2 months away. LSU will hit Tiger Stadium on April 22nd. So now that we know when the offseason will officially begin, or I guess the preseason, if you really want to put it that way, when that will begin, now the questions start to come up. The questions of putting a bow on 2022 and looking ahead to 2023. And a lot of those questions could be answered in spring practice. Maybe so. Could be answered in the spring game. But also, there might be a whole lot more questions that arise throughout spring practice, that arise throughout the spring game, throughout summer. But my biggest question now for LSU as we approach the preseason, as we approach spring practice, is who will be Malik Nabers' number two? I guess the follow-up question to that, or question 1B, is Malik Nabers number one? And I think it's a fair assessment that Malik Nabers will be. Now, to be completely fair, going back this time last year, I would have said that Kayshon Booty, that far and above, would have been the number one. But I look at the way that this roster is built and the wide receiver core that we're working with in 2023. I think Malik Nabers, I feel very safe to say, Malik Nabers is going to be your number one wide receiver in 2023. Given what he did in 22, given the clear and obvious relationship and chemistry that Malik Nabers and Jaden Daniels have, I'll make the assumption that he's number one. So who's his number two? Option number one, Kyren Lacy. He's coming into his fourth year of college football. Of course, two of those at ULL, one at LSU this past year. 24 receptions, 268 yards, no touches on the season. But I think Kyren Lacy was adjusting to, one, the obvious increase in the difficulty of opponents, and two, kind of navigating a pretty stacked receiver room this past year. Keep in mind that LSU is leaving Jeray Jenkins, who was number three statistically in receiving yards in terms of the wide receiver group. So number three wide receiver in terms of stats, you're losing Kayshon Booty. Statistically, Kayshon Booty was your number two wide receiver, and then Jack Besh, who was buried on the list of production in terms of wide receivers, but of course he was on and off the field with injuries. He's transferring to TCU. Jeray Jenkins headed to the NFL. Kayshon Booty headed to the NFL as well. So Kyren Lacy, as a transfer, was just kind of navigating this wide receiver room buried beneath a lot of experience and also a lot of guys that have been in the room at LSU. So Kyren Lacy, I'm looking to be one. I think if I'm going to pick one, if today, if you say, okay, you know, Caroline, you have to pick who you think is going to be Malik Nabers certified number two, I'm going to say Brian Thomas. And I know a lot of people are saying that Brian Thomas really broke out last year. I don't think that that's fair to say about Brian Thomas, because I would say Malik Nabers broke out last year, because I think that's absolutely what he did. And to put Brian Thomas in that same conversation, I don't think would be fair to Malik Nabers. I would say Brian Thomas made a name for himself last year. Brian Thomas made himself known as a threat. Brian Thomas at least became a name that we recognize and became a receiver that defenses had to pay attention to. Now, my question for Brian Thomas is he poised for a breakout this upcoming season? Is he poised to be that number two? 31 receptions, 361 yards, and 5 touchdowns in this past year. I think if I had to say right now who's going to be your number two guy, I look at Brian Thomas to be probably the most likely. And then you've got 3 newcomers. And maybe one calling them a newcomer isn't necessarily fair. And that's Landon Ibieta, who's coming into his second year, 2022 true freshman, who was limited with injuries, didn't see at much, if at any, production within in the regular season, both with being young, again, in a stacked wide receiver room, and also, like I mentioned, with injuries. But against Purdue, he saw a little bit of work late in the game, 2 receptions for 15 yards. So Landon Ibieta is not necessarily a newcomer because he's going into his second year, but he's new to us. You know, we don't know what Landon Ibieta can truly be. He was a 3-star coming out of Mandeville High School. This is really going to be his first true season in college football, getting that experience, that in-game experience. I don't think that he's going to be your number two guy. Maybe that's not fair for me to say, considering I haven't seen much of Landon Ibieta at all, really, limited solely to just what we saw against Purdue and what I read about Landon Ibieta from spring and summer practices this past season. I don't think he's going to be your number two guy, but he's at least a guy that can continue to grow and learn the system and work his way up the ranks. Looking at Aaron Anderson as an Alabama transfer. Of course, from New Orleans in 2022, he was the top recruit in Louisiana. He was also sidelined with an injury at Alabama for majority of the 2022 season. I know, and I don't know for a fact, but I feel really, really, really certain, given his history, that Aaron Anderson is a good bit of the special teams conversation. Now, what can he do in spring practice to emerge as being part of the conversation, not just in special teams, but in the offensive scheme as well? And also, between Landon Ibieta and Aaron Anderson, can they stay healthy? Can they consistently be on the field? Can they consistently be relied upon? In year one, they struggle with injury. You know, it was like tweaks here and there. In year two, can you be more consistent? And then, of course, the third and final newcomer, of course, Shelton Sampson, 5-star wide receiver out of Catholic High. Is he ready year one? And I don't know the answer to that question. I would say he could probably be a guy that you can look to kind of ease into the rotation. Again, I don't think any of these 3 quote-unquote newcomers, Landon Ibieta, Aaron Anderson, or Shelton Sampson, are going to be your certified number two, just given that they have such little, if any, college football experience. And it's going to take some time to get adjusted to the offense, to get adjusted to the workload, and to get adjusted to the expectations. But those are at least guys that, if they're not number two, they're guys that you can continue to kind of groom and work along. That's what I'm looking at. That's my number one question this offseason, that I don't think we're going to get an answer until the regular season. We might start to get, you know, an idea as we start to see spring practice and scrimmages in the spring game. But that's my number one question going into the offseason is it's Malik Nabers and then who else? But coming up next, I have 2 more questions for LSU's offseason. We'll get into those coming up next. But before we do that, I want to tell you about FanDuel because we are now in the midway point of the NBA season and it's the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sports book. So because new customers get a no sweat first bet up to $1,000. I mean, yeah, bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It is safe, it's secure, and it is super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything. You can do the money line to point scores to 3s drained. You can do any sort of player props, rebounds, assists, etc. You name it, they've got it on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same-game parlay. Or you can even look to the FanDuel Sportsbook app to see some odds boosts going on. FanDuel will put some parlays together of point totals or rebounds or assists, and you can also bet on those on FanDuel. So don't miss the chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/lockedon. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Well, thanks for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. Make sure that you check out our brand new podcast, Locked On College Basketball. Everything that you need to know about college basketball, all in one place. Plus, you can hear from big name experts, insiders, coaches, and players. Locked On College Basketball, available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. So one of my biggest questions for LSU going into the offseason, what does your wide receiver core look like? Is it going to be, you know, a tandem of a 1-2, a 1A, a 1B? Or is it going to be the Jaden Daniels to Malik Nabers show like we saw in 2022 with a certified number two guy? And also, maybe it's not something that I mentioned this past segment, that guy might not be a wide receiver. It could be Mason Taylor. I mean, I don't know that. Just the way that we know how Brian Kelly and Mike Denbrock like to utilize the tight end, how we know that Mason Taylor's responsibilities increased throughout the season, how we saw Mason Taylor really break out game over game, week over week, month over month this past year, I honestly wouldn't be surprised to see Malik Nabers be your go-to guy in the receiving core and Mason Taylor being that utilized as almost like a Travis Kelce type, where it's just, you know, just automatic from the quarterback to the tight end, constant slants, constant, you know, dinks and dunks to the tight end. That's another question, is how are the tight ends going to be utilized? Because we know that they're going to be utilized in some way if we know the tendencies of Mike Denbrock and Brian Kelly. But my next question is, what the heck are you going to do to fix the special teams? And I don't know any more poetic or kind way to put that other than it was so god-awful this past year. Like, what are you going to do to fix it? What are you going to do about it? Because it didn't get better throughout the season. It was most obvious probably against Florida State, you know, blocked field goal, blocked extra point, two muffed punts. But it really shot LSU in the foot, special teams did, all season long. And it was so freaking frustrating to see it. And so when I look at something like that, when it seems to be a continued issue week over week over week, I ask myself, okay, was it the coaches or the players? Are they coaching it incorrectly? Are they coaching it poorly? Or are the players just not receptive? Are the players just not good enough? I go to a former NFL general manager who used to work for the radio station that I work for. What he always used to say, his philosophy as a GM was, you're either coaching it or you're allowing it to happen. And this past season, LSU was allowing those special teams blunders to happen because they weren't getting better, because they weren't changing. It was an issue all year long. So I wish that I had more to expand upon with that. But my question is, what are you going to do to fix it? What are you going to do to be better on special teams? What are you going to do to not shoot yourselves in the foot, one, and two, to pick up those easy opportunities? Get the field goals. Get the extra points. At least catch a freaking punt. Don't make things harder on yourself than it already is. You already play in the most difficult division and the most difficult conference in college football. Don't make things harder on yourself because you can't catch a freaking punt. I mean, give me a break. Every week it was something. Penalties on kickoff returns, whatever it might be. What are you going to do to fix it? Bringing in Aaron Anderson, I think, is one step in the right direction, given Aaron Anderson's wonderful experience in special teams and just his stats alone on kickoff returns. What we saw at Edna Carr when he was in high school, that's one way of, okay, you're bringing in some personnel that can help the special teams unit that has proven himself on a special teams unit, at least at the high school level, not yet at the college level, but the, you know, talent is there. The speed is there. But what else are you going to do? Was it a Brian Pullian issue? If it was, are you moving Brian Pullian off of special teams? I don't know the answer to that question, but the special teams needs to be fixed. It does. It absolutely does. It hurt LSU so many times this year. I'm not going to say that was the difference between an LSU loss and an LSU win against Tennessee, because there was so much that went wrong in that game. But starting off a game against Tennessee, a team that can easily score points, and handing them an easy 7 points because you cannot catch a kick, the kickoff, that's a problem. That's already setting yourself back 7-0 at the very beginning of the game. Don't make things harder than it needs to be. Fix the special teams, please. And what exactly are you going to do that? How are you going to do that? The second thing is, and maybe this isn't a fair question, but it's something that I think about every single year of your year one guys going into year two, since we have a good enough sample size, but really just a 1 year sample size, my question is, are the year two guys going to take a step back, or are they going to come back, and are they going to build upon what they did in year one? Because one thing that I felt so good about with LSU this past year is how much contribution they got from the true freshmen. And also, like, hey, you got those guys coming into year two, and ideally, those guys would only build upon that. Those guys would only get better, only get stronger, only be more sure of themselves in this system. So, and this is based off of no speculation or anything. It's just always a question that I have. It's a question that I have with guys in the NFL going from their rookie years to year two. It's a question that I have for college football players from their true freshman season to year two, or maybe their, you know, their first real breakout season going into that next year, is step back or come back. Harold Perkins was your leading sacker on the team with 7.5 sacks. It didn't look like Harold Perkins was slowing down anytime soon. It didn't look like Harold Perkins could be stopped. But what is Harold Perkins going to look like in year two? Mason Taylor, he was your third leading receiver on the year. 38 receptions, 414 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Like I mentioned, Mason Taylor only got better throughout the season. Mason Taylor, the guy that I was getting so confused about and so frustrated with Mike Denbrock. And he was calling plays, you know, short 4 or 5 yard slants to Mason Taylor. I'm like, why the heck are you feeding the ball to the true freshman tight end when you've got an All-American wide receiver down there who is wide open? It really seemed to pay off because Mason Taylor really, really built game over game. So what is Mason Taylor going to be? What is his responsibility going to be now that you're losing 3 receivers in Jerae Jenkins, Kayshon Boutte, and Jack Besh? Does that make Mason Taylor's job and responsibilities grow? How is he going to handle those responsibilities if that is the case? And then Will Campbell and Emory Jones, of course, the guys on your left and right side in the offensive line. The problem with the offensive line this past year was it was always changing. You know, it wasn't until, I can't remember off the top of my head, whatever game it was, a few weeks into the season, that was the first time there was continuity week over week on the offensive line. So you would think that 2 guys on the outside, true freshmen who were dealing with constant changes on the inside, at guard, at center, that now that they have a year under their belts working together on the outside, that in year two, with even more continuity, that it'll be better. And they'll be bigger and they'll be stronger. And they're 2 guys that were really good and really reliable on the offensive line. So that's another thing. Are you going to have more continuity on the offensive line? Are you going to throw Will Campbell and Emory Jones a few bones this year so they don't have to constantly be adjusting to changes on the offensive line? So year two, guys, step back or come back. I have no reason to believe that these 4 guys would take steps back, but it's something to think about. And it's something that I'll be looking at throughout spring practice and in the spring game is how much bigger do they look? How much stronger do they look? How much faster do they look? And I don't mean faster just in the way that they run fast. It's more so fast of sure of themselves. And I think that's something more so as linemen, especially on the offensive line, is do you know where you're going? Or are you going to be more reactive to the defensive line? Are you going to be quick off the line of scrimmage? And are you going to be able to, you know exactly what you're doing and know exactly what your assignment is as soon as that ball is snapped? And then also faster, meaning, you know, Mason Taylor and Harold Perkins, just 2 quick guys, a route runner and a guy who's just so fast to be able to hunt quarterbacks down. So that's what I mean by fast. It's kind of a 2-parter, is quick with reflexes and also like literally physically running fast. But it is a Mailbag Wednesday. It's a day full of questions. My questions for LSU, your LSU questions for me. So we will get into our mailbag coming up next. All right, so it's a Mailbag Wednesday. Appreciate everybody for sending their questions in. You can always send your questions in any day, a Wednesday, or any other day of the week, and send them in on Twitter at CarolineFenton1 or at LockedOnLSU. DM them, tweet them at me. I love hearing your questions, or you can comment them on the YouTube page as well. I've been getting a lot of DMs. Keep sending them to me. I appreciate those. But Mo sends in a question, and I thought this was a really interesting one. So there's 6 teams with the best odds to win the college football playoff next year. Those 6 teams are Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, USC, and LSU. Of those 6 teams, who do you see as being the most fraudulent and could lose 3 to 4 games next year? Really interesting question. Because I think that we are so focused on who was good last year and just assuming that that team is going to be good next year, I think that's the Nick Saban effect, right? And now I guess the Kirby Smart effect of these two coaches have been able to figure out what is so difficult, and it's reloading in an era where so many players leave, whether it's the NFL draft or in the transfer portal. These coaches have unlocked what's really difficult of continuing to build up talent year over year over year over year when it's so easy for players to now leave. So of those four teams, Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, USC, and LSU, I see two that could be quote-unquote fraudulent. And what I mean by fraudulent is having such high expectations, and I don't know if this was the intention of the person who asked the question of Mo, but my interpretation is you have such high expectations, and people think so highly of you, yet you don't even come close to delivering. For me, the way that I interpret the national perspective of LSU is, I think a lot of people still have a lot of questions about LSU. Like, nobody really knows how to figure LSU out. Like, it's a really good year one for Brian Kelly, but since this Brian Kelly era is so new, it might be so difficult to try and put your finger on LSU and set really high expectations, even though they have the sixth highest odds to win the college football playoff next year, even though they went to the SEC championship. If LSU ends up winning, you know, eight games next year, I don't know if anyone's going to look at LSU and say, oh, they're frauds. I think it's more so going to look at LSU and say, okay, you overachieved in year one. Maybe you underachieved in year two. In year three under the Brian Kelly era, are we going to start to see the law of averages kind of even out to see LSU be like a 9-10 win team year over year? So I don't think that if LSU under, you know, if LSU wins four games next year, yeah, frauds. I don't think that's going to happen though. The two teams that I could see getting that label, one I think is USC. One of those reasons being, I just don't believe in Lincoln Riley. I really don't. I believe that Lincoln Riley is labeled as this quarterback whisperer, quarterback guru, and maybe that's a fair label considering three of the quarterbacks that he's coached has won the Heisman Trophy, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and now Caleb Williams. Every time a Lincoln Riley coach team gets up on the biggest stage of the year, they totally poop their pants. I mean, there's a reason why Lincoln Riley is 0-4 in the college football playoff. That all USC had to do this past year is beat Utah in the Pac-12 championship, and then they probably would have been a college football playoff team, and they couldn't do that. So I just don't believe in Lincoln Riley on the biggest stages. Also, one factor going into whenever you're trying to project seasons, one factor that I think often goes underrated or undernoticed or unnoticed is the schedule. So let's look at USC's schedule because it's pretty difficult. It's pretty tough. They have an early bye. They've got San Jose State, Nevada, Stanford. You're going to go 3-0 in that stretch. And then they've got an early bye on the fourth week of the season. And then they take on Arizona State. And I think Arizona State could be a tricky team this year. A new head coach in Kenny Dillingham. Arizona State has like 74 quarterbacks in their quarterback room, Jaden Rashada included. So the Arizona State's got a lot of options at quarterback. They're going to be able to absolutely have plenty of talent accumulated on that roster. And then they go to Colorado. I don't know about you, but I don't really want to have to have a piece of whatever Coach Prime is building at Colorado. Then it's Arizona, and then they go on the road at Notre Dame. Notre Dame, a team that got really hot at the end of last season. Marcus Freeman is bringing in a whole lot of fours and five stars in this 2023 class. And at Notre Dame, not the easiest place to play. Then you take on Utah, a team that absolutely had USC's number this past year. I see Utah continuing to be a team that's difficult on your schedule. Then they go to Cal, take on Washington, and then Oregon and UCLA to close out the rest of the season. That's a pretty tough schedule. That's a sneaky tough schedule. And that's also me assuming that Arizona State's going to take a step forward, that Colorado is going to be a step is going to take a step forward. But I think those are pretty safe assumptions. So USC's schedule is not a cakewalk. The Pac-12 is no longer a cakewalk. So I think that USC absolutely could underperform this year. The other one that I see is Alabama. And I know that this time next year, I might be looking back on this take and thinking, you idiot, underestimating Nick Saban yet again. But Alabama has a whole lot of holes that they need to fill. I'm sitting up here concerned about who's going to be Malik Nabers number two. If that's the biggest of my concerns, then I think you can feel pretty good about where LSU's roster is at. Alabama has to replace the offensive coordinator, has to replace their defensive coordinator, has to replace their starting quarterback, and also has to replace their top defensive player in Will Anderson. Bill O'Brien, offensive coordinator, going back to the NFL, joining Bill Belichick in the New England Patriots. Pete Golding joining Lane Kiffin's staff at Ole Miss. Bryce Young and Will Anderson, both in the NFL draft. That's a whole lot of production that you're going to have to replace. Now, I know. Alabama, better than anybody, collects talent, and it's just reload every single year. But I think, especially considering the coordinator situation, I think Alabama, it might take some time. This past year, Alabama wasn't Alabama. Alabama didn't look as dominant as they have maybe in years past. I think with maybe some adjustments and holes, and that was even with who I thought was the best quarterback in all of college football, and Bryce Young, and they still kind of struggled. Even in some of the games that they won, like Texas, Alabama struggled. It took an injured Quinn Ewers and an expertly crafted drive at the end of that game from Bryce Young for Alabama to just barely squeak past a pretty average Texas team. Without Bryce Young, without Will Anderson, and with two new coordinators in the building, I wouldn't be surprised to see another year where Alabama just doesn't look quite like Alabama. And maybe an Alabama that doesn't look quite like Alabama is still a 10 or 11 win team. Probably is. But I think that I'll look at Alabama that has a lot of questions that need to be answered within the offseason. I went kind of long there, so we'll get to back to the rest of your questions on next week's Mailbag Wednesday, but continue to send those questions in every single week. I love hearing what y'all want to talk about, and I love answering those questions. But that's going to do it for me today. Thank you for making Locked On LSU your first listen every day. For your second listen today, check out our brand new podcast, Locked On College Basketball. Experts Isaac Shade and Andy Patton bring you everything that you need to know on and off the court. Plus, you can hear from big name experts, coaches, and players throughout the basketball landscape. Locked On College Basketball, available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.